Welcome. You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for the January 3rd reading of The Environment, a compilation of articles from Mother Earth News, the magazine of the Sierra Club, and the Nature Conservancy magazine. My name is John. Our first article this afternoon comes to us from the Nature Conservancy magazine. If, in fact, you made a New Year's resolution, including travel around this beautiful state of Colorado, they bring us 15 must-visit road trip destinations across Colorado. Outgoings for you and your family to enjoy while learning about the Nature Conservancy's conservation impacts in Colorado. Having navigated the pandemic, many people are turning to nature for solace, enjoyment, or just a change of pace. Getting outdoors is a healthy response to the stressful and intense times we have lived through. The Nature Conservancy preserves. First, there are several TNC preserves, land-owned and stewarded by the Nature Conservancy, in Colorado that are open to the public dawn to dusk. 1. High Creek Fen Preserve. Located 8.5 miles south of Fairplay, High Creek Fen is an astonishing vestige of the last ice age and contains more rare plant species than any other wetland known in Colorado. 2. Aiken Canyon. A 20-minute drive from Colorado Springs, Aiken Canyon offers beautiful scenery and wildlife viewing in the zone where mountains meet plains. 3. Yampa River. About 20 minutes west of Steamboat Springs, the Yampa River Preserve harbors one of the largest remaining examples of a rare riverside forest dominated by narrow-leaf cottonwood, box elder, and red osier dogwood. 4. The San Miguel River. In southwest Colorado, 3 Nature Conservancy preserves support rare streamside habitat along more than 30 miles of the San Miguel River. Destinations within 2 hours of Denver. In addition to our preserves, the Nature Conservancy's lasting impacts can also be seen across Colorado. The places listed below are open to the public, including some of the off-the-beaten-path destinations to explore. Mueller State Park and Dome Rock State Park Wildlife Area. Teddy Roosevelt visited the Mueller Ranch west of Colorado Springs in 1901 and exclaimed that the scenery was such as to bankrupt the English language. Recognizing that the property was threatened by development, the Nature Conservancy purchased the 12,000-acre ranch in 1978. The area is host to wildlife, including eagles, elk, black bear, and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep. The original ranch is now divided into 2 state-owned areas, Mueller State Park and Dome Rock State Wildlife Area. Mueller State Park offers 36 miles of mountain biking trails, picnic areas, log cabins, camping, and hiking. Dome Rock State Wildlife Area, a prime calving ground for Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, offers seasonal hunting and fishing, but visitors must have a valid hunting or fishing license to access the area. Boulder Creek. In Boulder, you don't have to go far to see Nature Conservancy's influence on people and nature. Boulder Creek flows with water that the Nature Conservancy helped purchase in 1983. This transaction was the first time in Colorado that a water right was converted from agricultural use to an in-stream flow, benefiting the river and surrounding habitat. In-stream flows are now a common conservation tool to protect water running in rivers for plants and wildlife. Today, Boulder Creek is popular for swimming, fishing, tubing, kayaking, walking, biking, and much, much more. Enjoy the creek by walking or biking the Boulder Creek Path, picnicking in Eben G. Fine Park, or birdwatching in the restored prairie and ponds north of CU Boulder's East Campus. White Rocks Nature Preserve. Near Gun Barrel, the White Rocks Trailhead takes you through the rolling hills of a grassland ecosystem. The Nature Conservancy and the City of Boulder entered into an agreement in 1982 to purchase White Rocks Nature Preserve and place a conservation easement on approximately 200 acres adjacent to Teller Lake and Teller Preserve. The area is host to magnificent sandstone outcroppings and supports a wide variety of wildlife, including a heron rookery, barn owls, and mule deer. Multi-use and handicap accessible trails are available at White Rocks with connections to the Teller Farm. Heal Valley Ranch. In 1994, the Nature Conservancy helped purchase the Heal Valley Ranch and transfer it to the City of Boulder. Today, the park has trails for hiking, mountain biking, and horseback riding while still protecting large connected habitat for wildlife. The 6,231-acre ranch is home to over 50 species of mammals and nearly 100 species of birds. Golden eagles and prairie falcons nest in the cliffs and canyons. While picnic shelters and tables are currently closed, restrooms are available, and the variety of trails and scenery make for a great outing close to the Front Range. Bluff Lake Nature Center. Bluff Lake is a unique urban wildlife refuge in North Denver. It is Denver's largest open space managed as native habitat. The Bluff Lake Nature Center is dedicated to educating and inspiring people of all ages to respect, protect, and connect with our natural world. More than 8,000 local school children come to Bluff Lake each year to enjoy nature or to take part in scheduled programs or events. The Nature Conservancy in Colorado partners with Bluff Lake to make youth education programs accessible to low-income and underserved children in North Denver neighborhoods. Bluff Lake is open to visitors daily, sunrise to sunset, and offers several walking or jogging trails, as well as a self-guided nature tour oriented towards kids. Destinations more than 2 hours from Denver. Great Sand Dunes National Park. The Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve is one of the most biologically significant landscapes of its size in the state. It has several rare insect species, like the Great Sand Dunes tiger beetle, that are found nowhere else in the world. Together with the Nature Conservancy's Medano and Zapata ranches, which lie just south of the dunes, the landscape is considered one of Colorado's hotspots because of the abundance of native and rare species and its connection to vast conserved areas, including the Baca National Wildlife Refuge and the Sangre de Cristo Wilderness Area. In 2000, the Nature Conservancy worked with residents of the San Luis Valley, National Park Service staff, and elected officials to develop legislation to designate the park. In 2004, the Nature Conservancy acquired the 97,000-acre Baca Ranch, which was essential to establishing the national park. Great Sand Dunes National Park is open to the public for hiking, camping, surfing the dunes, playing in Medano Creek, and more. It's also an international dark sky park where you can see the Milky Way on dark nights. North Star Preserve. A popular river destination near Aspen for paddleboarding and floating in the summer, the North Star Preserve was once a historic ranch. In the 1960s and 70s, the ranch was slated for development for up to 1,500 homes. The Nature Conservancy purchased 175 acres of North Star Ranch in 1977 and transferred it to Pitkin County, which began managing the property as the first nature preserve in the county. North Star supports high biological diversity with at least 107 species of birds and many animals, including elk, coyotes, black bears, and bobcats. An especially unique feature is a great blue heron colony, one of only 63 in Colorado. The North Star colony is thought to be one of very few occurring above 8,000 feet. Visit North Star for floating the river or walking the trails. Please remain on the trails and do not venture into closed areas of the preserve. Keystone Gorge. Just outside of Telluride, Keystone Gorge features a moderate 2.5-mile loop trail that goes through aspen groves and fir forests and over several crossings of the San Miguel River. The trail lies on a 40-acre parcel that the Nature Conservancy protected in 2006 and transferred to San Miguel County in 2009. The trail offers river views, historic mining ruins, and a quiet adventure close to town. Hikers recommend starting down the south part of the loop, which follows the Galloping Goose Trail and is an old railroad grade, and hiking up the steeper north side. Picket Wire Canyonlands. These canyons in the Comanche National Grasslands are home to the largest dinosaur track site in North America. Over 1,900 prints and 130 separate trackways extend across a quarter mile of bedrock along the Purgatory River. This area provides a window into the ecology, history, and paleontology of canyon country in southeast Colorado. While the Nature Conservancy was not involved in its protection, in the early 1990s, the Colorado Natural Heritage Program, at the time under the leadership of Chris Pegg, now Senior Conservation Ecologist for the Nature Conservancy in Colorado, did an ecological inventory of the area. The data gleaned from that effort and Chris's personal experience served as the wake-up call that elevated the little-known region to one of the Nature Conservancy's biggest conservation priorities. Since then, the Nature Conservancy and our partners have conserved more than 600,000 acres of grasslands in the area. To visit, you can camp at the Withers Trailhead, where there is also a short one-mile loop trail with big views. Otherwise, be prepared for heat and long hikes. It's an 11.5-mile round trip to see the dinosaur tracks. Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park. One of the first big Western successes in water conservation occurred here when the Nature Conservancy negotiated the transfer of a large water right from a coal mining company in 1988. Instead of building a dam, the company donated the water rights to the Nature Conservancy to be dedicated to in-stream flows for the Gunnison River through the area that became the national park. Now, the canyon is loved for spectacular views, hiking, fishing, rafting, and rock climbing. Fisher's Peak State Park. South of Trinidad, Colorado, Fisher's Peak was purchased by the Nature Conservancy and the Trust for Public Land in 2019 and transferred to the state in 2020 to become our next and second largest state park. As of October 2020, a small part of Fisher's Peak State Park, 250 acres, is open to the public. This section of the park includes a three-quarter-mile trail, a picnic area, and scenic views, and requires a Colorado Parks and Wildlife vehicle pass to enter. As the rest of the park undergoes a planning process, this is a great way to glimpse the incredible landscape and wildlife in the area. Our next main article this afternoon from the Sierra Club magazine, how Boise educator Dick Jordan has sparked a love of nature in students. An award-winning high school teacher got his students out of the classroom and into the wild. Written by Lindsay Botts. Dick Jordan will never forget the moment two students asked him to help them launch an ecology club at Jerome High School in Idaho. It was 1990, and as a biology teacher with a background in conservation, Jordan was excited to oblige. He helped the students come up with a name, Teens Restoring Earth's Environment, or TREE. A few years later, he assisted them in hatching an advocacy campaign to help popularize the group, a drive to support the reintroduction of gray wolves in Idaho. In TREE's early years, wolf reintroduction was by far the biggest critter issue in Colorado, but the state's political establishment was opposed to the idea. So TREE members and Jordan organized a rally during which 400 students marched to the Idaho Capitol to urge lawmakers to support wolves and the Endangered Species Act. Students created wolf art that was hung up across the school. And when he moved to Timberline High School in Boise a few years later, Jordan started a new branch of TREE and mounted a successful campaign to change the school's mascot to a wolf. Jordan's early 90s pro-wolf advocacy was just one element of his decades-long effort to get his students to fall in love with wild nature. through Tree, which remains in action more than 30 years after its founding and has expanded to 5 other Idaho schools, students learn how ecosystems function, study the roles of wildlife species on the landscape, and get trained in the basics of field biology. They also meet with researchers and assist with their studies and participate in outdoor activities like whitewater rafting. Being a teacher was easy for me because I'm a showman, Jordan says. So, for me, it was showing the stuff I love and then unpacking it. We would go on field trips, and that's why when Tree came about, it opened the door, because then I was not just a classroom teacher. It was all about field trips. Jordan's success in taking the classroom to the outdoors has won him national recognition. In 2012, he was one of the recipients of the Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching. His students' advocacy has been covered by the BBC, the Washington Post, and the New Yorker. Most important, he has motivated countless students throughout the years. In a place like Idaho, there are a lot of authorities that are very anti-science, says former Tree member Ethan Tolman, who is now a PhD candidate at the City University of New York. So it was inspiring to see somebody on a local level being willing to stand up for science. By far, the most memorable and emotional of Tree's efforts was its wolf program. The club's wolf education got personal in 2002 when Suzanne Asha Stone, who then worked at Defenders of Wildlife, asked Jordan if Tree wanted to adopt a wolf pack. Stone had been a frequent presenter at Timberland High, teaching the kids how to howl and sharing with them the importance of wolves to keep deer and elk populations in check. By the early 2000s, wolves were moving off federal and tribal land where they had been reintroduced and into other parts of Idaho. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had located a female and her pup just north of the school. For Jordan, the idea of adopting the pack made perfect sense. I immediately saw a unique opportunity to build a profound connection with a family of wolves, Jordan says. I wanted students to take responsibility for a relationship that very few get and help the general public understand why these creatures deserve our respect and protection. The students named their new neighbors the Timberline Pack and got permission from the Nez Perce tribe to track the wolves on tribal land. With the help of former Fish and Wildlife Service biologist Carter Niemeyer, Jordan and the club members took overnight field trips to the pack's territory. They rarely saw wolves, but the kids reveled in the echoes of their calls during howl surveys and got the chance to study the remains of wolf kills. Tree students visited the wolf pack's territory 7 times over the years. While the wolves remained popular among most students at Timberland High, antipathy toward wolves was growing in Idaho. In 2011, gray wolves in the Northern Rockies were removed from Endangered Species Act protections. And in 2021, a state law went into effect that allowed hunters to kill wolves without bag limits using an extensive arsenal, including chokehold snares and leghold traps. At the end of 2021, nearly 20 years after Tree adopted the Timberline Pack, Jordan learned that all members of the pack had been shot, including the pups. Tree's student co-vice president at the time was a junior named Michael Liao, who was stunned that the wolf pack had been massacred. With Jordan's encouragement, Liao gathered all the data he could on why the state was killing wolves with such fervor. After speaking with biologists, Liao found out that the state was misapplying the statistical model used to determine the wolf population, which had the result of inflating wolf numbers and allowing for more kills. I was trying to get both sides of it because Mr. Jordan was like, hey, the best way to learn about this is to just look it up and research it, Liao says. Jordan retired from full-time teaching in 2015, but he remains involved with Tree as an informal advisor. He started a nonprofit called Life Outdoors, which offers 2 outdoor education programs. The Boise River Biodiversity Project enlists high schoolers to serve as science mentors to elementary school students who pick 1 animal to learn about. Finding Dragons is a community scientist program in which students and adults survey dragonflies and damselflies, both of which are indicator species for healthy wetlands. Education has got to be paramount, Jordan says. If you are not teaching people the importance of healthy ecosystems, it does not matter what parks and quarters you've got out there. You've already lost the game. In this afternoon's final article, economic heating for winter homes. What is the most cost-efficient way to heat a home? Written by Marissa Ames with Mother Earth News. Do you feel the pinch of inflation and want more economic heating options during the cold months? Truly efficient heating systems may involve new construction or a home overhaul, but small changes can accrue big savings. Here are some economic heating tips for winter homes. Many home heating options, such as transitions to natural gas or installing heat pumps, pay off more in the long run, but they can be too expensive for savings this season. Before undertaking a whole home overhaul, measure your energy costs. An energy audit can also identify hazards such as carbon monoxide. Insulating pipes and heating ducts can prevent loss of heat from your hot water or furnace. Building an inexpensive solar air heater and placing it beside the sunniest windows of your home can provide passive heat. Heat grabbers work via the same concept of grabbing the sun's rays and converting it into heat for your home. What is the most cost-efficient way to heat a home? Lately, natural gas has been the best option, as it is cheaper than electric heat and propane, and it's often available in urban areas. However, rural properties may be unable to upgrade to natural gas, relying instead on propane or wood heat. And while wood heat is cheap if you have an abundance of trees in your area, a cord of wood can be expensive in desert or prairie settings. The best time to consider economic heating is while building the home. This is when contractors can incorporate home heating options such as heat pumps, which transfer heat to and from the ground or the atmosphere. Air source heat pumps draw heat from the air, concentrate it, and then distribute it through the house via ducts or pipes. This technology even works on cold days. Ground source heat pumps, also called geothermal systems, draw heat from the earth via pipes 6 to 8 feet beneath the surface or from vertical wells that descend a few hundred feet. Geothermal systems also work to cool homes during summer months by collecting heat from the building and pushing it into the earth. While heat pumps do not burn fossil fuels, they do require electricity to circulate the air, and that electricity generation may come from fossil fuels. Many homeowners with these heat pumps report massive energy savings, but only after saving enough energy to pay off construction costs, which can take a decade. They also do not work nearly as well in extreme climates. Construction ideas for energy-efficient homes also include berm construction, where the ground insulates part of the house, or passive solar design that places windows in the right position to catch winter sun but avoid direct light in the summer. If your home already uses boilers or furnaces, you may opt to upgrade. Newer energy-efficient models operate via the same concept but have insulation, direct venting systems, electric ignition, or better heat exchangers and condensers. Before spending your money on these home upgrades, measure your energy costs via an audit. Many local programs offer this as a free service, while others provide discounted costs. Overall, though, homeowners find the higher-end cost of $500 to be worth it, as the savings return within a year or two with a more efficient house. A formal home energy audit considers the age of your home, furnace, and hot water heater. Technicians may conduct a blower door test, which involves closing off all windows, then fitting a fan into an open doorway to measure air pressure and the overall air exchange rate. This can identify whether heat leaks from your house via drafts. Another audit benefit is the combustion safety check, which can determine whether carbon monoxide leaks from your furnace and will hurt your family if you close all windows and vents. To perform your own combustion test, especially after insulating any drafts, turn on your hot water to pilot. Run hot water for 5 minutes, which will cause your hot water heater to kick on. Securely close windows and doors. Turn on dryers and exhaust fans within the kitchen and bathroom. Light your water heater burner. After 1 minute, check to see if it feels warm and moist, or hold up a smoking match to see whether air blows out of the house. Remember that if your water heater or furnace leaks carbon monoxide, that airflow is important to mitigate carbon monoxide. If you do not have the time or money for an audit and upgrades this year, invest in weather stripping and consider building one of several do-it-yourself solar air heaters. These can reduce heating costs and increase comfort in any home, no matter whether they use wood heat, gas, or electricity. Thank you for joining us for the January 3rd reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.